Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the Monday, February the 11th meeting of the University City Council to order. Ms. Reese, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Clay.
Present.
Councilmember Carr.
Present.
Councilmember McMahon.
Here.
Councilmember Hales.
Here.
Councilmember Cusick.
Here.
Councilmember Smotherson.
Here.
Mayor Crow.
Here. Thank you very much. You have before you the agenda for this evening. May I have a motion to approve?
Motion
to approve.
Approve.
Is there a second? Second by Ms. Carr. Is there a discussion? Yep.
Thank you, Mayor. We have a number of people here tonight, I think, on item K2, which is the Olive 170 development project update. I'd like to request that we move that item on the agenda to after the swearing in, so after G and before H.
Is there a second? There's a second to move the item K2 after the swearing in commissions. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The agenda will be amended to allow for the item K2 to be discussed and then comments at that time as well. We have no proclamation.
Excuse me, Mayor. Well, who was the second on that?
Ms. Carr.
Thank you.
We have no proclamations. You have before you the minutes of the January 28th regular session. Is there a motion that they be approved? Motion by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Second by Mr. McMahon. Any discussion? Hearing none. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. You have before you January 28th, 2019 joint study session. Motion that they be approved. Mr. McMahon, is there a second? Mr. Cusick, any discussion? Ms. Carr.
I just wanted to ask the city clerk if the amendment, the change had been made earlier.
No, I have a note here to change page 12 of E2.
Yes.
From the city's website to the
Better Together
website paragraph
right.
2.
Okay. So I'll make that.
I
will make that motion that what I actually said was a Better Together website as opposed to the city website. So on page E24 maybe.
So there's a motion to amend the minutes from January 28th in order to clarify comments. Ms. Reese, you have those comments, I believe, now, correct? Is there a second? Second by Mr. Hales. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. We'll now move forward with appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. Hales.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to reappoint Craig Hughes to the Traffic Commission.
There is a motion to approve. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Smotherson. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Hales.
Thank you. I'd like to move to reappoint Dennis Fuller to the Traffic Commission.
Where do I have Dennis? I have David Rowan. Oh, I apologize. I was skipping. There's a motion for Dennis Fuller. Is there a second? Ms. Carr, any discussion? Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Mr. Hales.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to move to reappoint David Rowan to the Urban Forestry Commission.
Is there a second? Ms. Carr, is there a discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Ms. Carr.
I would like to nominate Cindy Theory to the Arts and Letters Commission as a fill-in replacing Fred Fairs for his unexpired term.
Is there a second? Mr. Cusick, any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
And I'll abstain.
Councilmember.
It's my wife.
Councilmember McMahon abstains. Thank you very much. The mayor is the one that nominates the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax Board. I would nominate Matthew Erker for that position. Is there a second? Seconded by Ms. Carr. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. For the record, St. Louis County has appointed Byron Price and Tracy Moore to the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax Board. They did that at their meeting on January 29, 2019. We'd now like to move forward with the swearing in. Mr. Tears was sworn into the Traffic Commission on February the 4th. Mr. Price was sworn into EDRST on February the 7th. And I believe is Julie Brill, Texeria.
I, Julie Texera.
Raise your right hand, I'm sorry. Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications and am not subject to any of the disqualifications named in the charter for the office I am about to assume.
Yes. Or repeat the whole thing. Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications and am not subject to any of the disqualifications named in the charter for the office I am about to assume.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States and of the state of Missouri, and the charter and the ordinances of University City.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States and of the state of Missouri, and the charter and ordinances of University City.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties of the office I am about to assume with impartiality and justice.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties of the office I am about to assume with impartiality and justice.
Thank you.
Our next swearing-in would be Steve Stone to the Economic Development Retail Sales Tax Board. Oh, I apologize. I said LSBD, Loop Special Business District. Thank you, Mr. Kusick. Thank you.
Hi. Steven Stone.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications and am not subject to any of the disqualifications named in the charter for the office I am about to assume.
Do solemnly swear that I possess all of the qualifications and am not subject to any of the disqualifications named in the charter for the office I'm about to assume.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States and of the state of Missouri and the charter and ordinances of University City.
That I will support the Constitution and the laws of the United States and of the state of Missouri and the charter and ordinances of University City.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties of the office I'm about to assume with impartiality and justice.
And that I will faithfully and conscientiously discharge the duties of the office I am about to assume with impartiality and justice. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike's not here, is he? Mike's not here, I don't think. No, true. I believe that concludes our appointments and swearing in for the evening. We'll now move to the amended agenda with the city manager's report, item K2, the Olive and I-170 redevelopment project update from the city manager. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and council members, This agenda item is intended to provide the mayor and council and public with an update on the Olive I-170 TIF project and seek direction on how to proceed. I want to start out providing you with a little bit of the background behind the project. The Olive and I-170 TIF project started as a discussion between residents of University City and a developer about ways to improve the condition of stagnant or declining housing values in the Third Ward. This discussion led to the City of University City conducting a request for proposals in March 2017. In May 2017, Novus Development submitted a proposal to the city regarding the redevelopment of approximately 32 acres of the north and south side of Olive Boulevard near I-170. The city determined that it was in the best interest of the city and its residents for the development to not only redevelop the 32 acres, but to allow for funding from the initial development to be used to make housing, infrastructure, and public safety improvements in the Third Ward and along Olive Boulevard corridor. On March 28, 2018, the city published a revised note of request for redevelopment proposals, and on March 30, 2018, Nova submitted a proposal. On May 23, 2018, and continued on June 6, 2018, June 22, 2018, and August 23, 2018, the TIF Commission held a public hearing at which all interested parties had an opportunity to be heard. On August 23, 2018, the TIF Commission passed a resolution recommending that the City Council approve the redevelopment plan and designate the redevelopment area as a redevelopment area. Pursuant to the TIF Act, approved the redevelopment project for each redevelopment project area and adopt a tax increment financing within each redevelopment area. I want to talk a little bit now about why we introduced the proposed redevelopment agreement. On January 14, 2019, the mayor and council introduced the proposed redevelopment agreement signed by John Brown of Novus Development. The agreement was placed on the agenda for introduction because execution of the agreement would result in significant benefits being provided to the community. Following are a few of the benefits that would be received. $15 million, with $7.5 million within the first 2 years of the development that would go towards both the Third Ward as well as the Olive Boulevard corridor. Minority contracting, first source employment, a potential Costco-like business, a possible hotel, an estimated $12.4 million in additional funding for parks and stormwater, an estimated $6.2 million in additional funding for fire protection, and an estimated $6.2 million in additional funding for economic development. 2 hours before the signed agreement was introduced on January 14, 2009, I became aware of 19 changes being requested by the developer. It was not known if the changes were major or minor, or if staff would recommend the changes. This, however, did mean that the proposed changes would need to be evaluated to determine the impacts and that we were back into the negotiation process. On January 18, 2019, a concerned resident indicated that there was a possible miscalculation in the bottom half revenues. As many of you know, the bottom half revenues consist of the local sales taxes not captured by TIF. We immediately began an investigation to determine if a miscalculation had occurred. Our investigation closed on February 5th, 2019, and we learned that there was a mistake that was made by PGAV in the belief that although the City of University City was a pool city, the revenues generated by both the 0.5% capital tax and the 1% countywide tax, the City of University City would retain 85% of the tax, with only 15% going to the pool. Instead, 100%, or an estimated $1 million, would go to the pool instead of the City of University City over the next 23 years. PGIV indicated that they believe that county staff were in agreement with their analysis relative to how the pool revenues were going to be distributed for the TIF district. So how do we proceed? Although there is an error in the amount of the revenues distributed to the pool, the benefits to the city in the signed proposed redevelopment agreement remain unaffected. Included in the proposed redevelopment agreement is that the city would contribute the 0.5% capital sales tax and the 1% countywide sales tax to help retire the TIF debt. The proposed agreement does not commit to any actual amount of revenue to the TIF, as we understand that the financial reports produced by PGAV are intended to be estimates, and that the actual amounts that will be received from the project is contingent upon the performance of the development. We are continuing with our negotiations with Novus. I want to repeat that. We are continuing with our negotiations with Novus. I want to confirm with the Mayor and Council that your interest for this TIF project has not changed. In addition to the aforementioned benefits, I want to confirm that you do not want to give up your authority relative to the use of eminent domain. We received several questions from the public, and so I want to begin to respond to some of those questions. And I would ask Mark Grimm, who is our special counsel from Gilmore and Bell, to come to the podium and explain the 353 structure. There has been much confusion regarding how that structure works and the impact that it would have on the school district. Mr. Grimm.
Good evening. Simply put, the 353 structure will not change in any way, shape, or form the amount of property tax revenues that any of the taxing districts receive. They will receive the same amount with this structure as they would receive under TIF. The purpose of allowing this structure as an option is to provide greater certainty to the amount of incremental real property taxes, in essence, that would be available for payment of the TIF. And so, as everyone knows, whether it's for your house or a business, property tax valuations are subject to challenge by the property owner. By abating the taxes under 353 and imposing a special assessment, then that special assessment becomes a certainty that is not subject to challenge by the property owner once it is set. Because of that degree of certainty over normal tax revenues, the bond underwriter is required to have a smaller coverage factor. So I don't want to get too complex on the financial side, but suffice it to say that greater certainty on the revenue stream results in more revenue that's available to repay the debt and would therefore repay the debt sooner. But in short, as I said at the beginning, all of the taxing districts receive the same amount of money under 353 as TIF.
Mr. Grimm, one other discussion. Could you comment briefly on the impact of the ERA to the TIF?
Well, the ERA has no impact on the amount of money that other taxing districts would receive from the project, has no impact on three of the sales taxes that the city would receive. It does lessen the amount of money that would be available for repayment of any TIF notes or TIF bonds.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. There are other questions that we received that I would just briefly like to address. Why was eminent domain use not removed? The answer to that is that the proposed redevelopment agreement does not affect council's rights relative to the use of eminent domain. They are not required to use it, or they can require it if they believe it is appropriate. So it does not affect their rights. How will public safety be addressed? If we use the traditional approach for public safety, it will require approximately $450,000 to hire the needed personnel. We are exploring the use of technology, crime prevention through environmental design, and requirements of the businesses to provide security to offset these costs. Question. Prop P, the half percent public safety sales tax is absent from Table 8. The answer is because this is entirely a pool sales tax, it is addressed in Table 9. Question. Why the change from $6 million to $10 million for base year revenues from businesses impacted by the TIF? The answer is estimates were initially based on information from the developer, and we were now able to collect data from the county, so our information is more accurate. This difference is not considered material difference since it is less than 2% of the annual revenue available for the TIF. Another question. A revised Table 8 from RPA 1, cost-benefit analysis, is included in the council meeting packet. I am concerned about values in year 2042 column. In the years leading up to the 2042, the increase of about 1% is shown, but the jump from 2041 to 2042 is about 46%. The answer is we advise PGIV to assume the TIF expires during the first quarter 2042, not at the end of 2041. There are a couple of months that are captured of the TIF in 2042. There was one final question that I'd like to address, and part of that is, well, why didn't staff catch this? And what I would say to that is we have experts that we hired. And experts, you hire them because you believe they know more than you do about a subject matter. Think of it as you're going to the doctor. You hire a surgeon. Because you want them to conduct some sort of surgery for you. Now, if that surgeon makes a mistake, is that your fault? Probably not. I think the reality is that we can't know everything, but we try to put people in place that's on our team so that we are reasonably able to catch the majority of things. We think that in this case, PGIV made a very bad mistake, but they made a very bad mistake based upon the analysis that they did, and they believed that they had contacted the appropriate institutions in order to verify that information. So we accept it, we own it, it's still our responsibility, it's still my responsibility ultimately for the information. Mayor and Council, in conclusion, University City was developed during a time period when revenues to the city for service delivery were primarily received from property taxes. However, a shift has occurred since the time University City was incorporated, as the Hancock Amendment now restricts increases in property taxes. Today, the bulk of our revenues are from sales taxes. As a pool city, this is a growing concern since cities with large tax bases are interested in leaving the pool. If Chesterfield is successful and is able to leave the pool, this will result in a similar situation with other cities with large sales tax bases leaving the pool as well. St. Louis County reported for the period of July 16 through June 7, 2017, University City generated $2,600,000 $28,795 in county sales taxes and received out of the pool $4,905,317. So quite an offset. We must continue to work to diversify our economy and not continue to be relying on other cities for revenues needed for service delivery. That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. We have a number of citizens who have asked to speak on this issue. Mr. Smelson, is there something you'd like to do at this time? Or?
Well, yes, in regards to the city manager's report, and I just simply wanted to thank the city manager and Mark Graham for their information, but I did want to just publicly state that I've stated this before, and that I'm not comfortable with having this done at this time, and all I'm simply letting it be known is that, and I'm hoping that my colleague Stacey Clay will agree, but as a council member for the third ward, I would like to state I will be talking to the city manager about holding a public meeting in a different setting, meaning in a town hall meeting setting, for the third ward, probably somewhere at the end of this month, and I just wanted to let people know. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have a number of citizens who have requested to speak on item K2. The first one to speak, I believe, is Mr. Tom Sullivan.
Tom Sullivan, 751 Syracuse. If we have learned anything about the proposed Isle of 170 development is that no one involved in promoting the project can be believed or trusted. There's been no small amount of deception from the beginning. Now it's said there's a $27 million mistake in the calculations. How can that be? Whenever you have run for office, Mr. Crow, you have claimed to be a big-time business guy. In addition to yourself, Councilman McMahon is an attorney. Councilwoman Carr has told of her in-the-weeds research. The city also has an attorney in the person of John Mulligan. It has a city manager in Gregory Rose. In replying to the city's RFP, Novus told of its experience in development. PGAV touts itself as an international firm. And if all that weren't enough, Mark Grimm of the Gilmore Bell Law Firm was introduced at one of the first meetings as a third-party overseer to make sure everything was done right. The firm advertises itself as, quote, bond counsel you know and trust. But then nearly a year after the project was announced, a big mistake was found by a citizen. So at this point, how can any of you be believed? The answer is you can't. The entire project is being built on a house of cards. What happens when they all fall, which is what happened in Sunset Hills with Novus? If a big mistake can be found on something that's been made public, what about all that's been covered up? City Manager Gregory Rose has stated more than once that there is no complete certainty with the project. I don't know if there is any at all, but there are still many questions that have not been answered. The concern is that the Isle of 170 project turns into another fiasco like Sunset Hills, and the city is irreparably harmed. All the claims made for that project are the same ones being made for University City. By the way, PGAV was involved in Sunset Hills, and I'm told Gilmore Bell was also. It would be nice to know what all their involvements together have been. It seems this council is so invested in a project that you will give away the city in order to keep it going. It's just more, more, and more, whatever it takes to get it done. The project is still the worst thing University City has ever attempted. The development would tear down everything in a nearly 50-acre area, almost 70 well-kept brick homes in a largely African-American neighborhood, 58 apartment units, buildings that contain dozens of businesses, of which many are owned by minorities and immigrants, two churches, and one school. Even worse, University City taxpayers would provide $70 million for the $190 million project and the developer only $60 million. With the recent changes and revelations, taxpayers may be given even more. This is why I'm sure the proposal would be overwhelmingly defeated if it was ever put to a vote of the people. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Our next request to speak is Mr. Tim Michaels.
Good evening. My name is Tim Michaels. I live at 7038 Cornell Avenue here in University City. Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I have to admit I haven't studied the TIF well enough to have a strong opinion about its merits or lack thereof. However, I do understand the need for economic development in the city, and I would suggest that there may be alternatives, uses for the $70 million that would yield true positive returns for the city. It is extremely cost-effective for the city to establish a process that would take itself to a net zero carbon production level. By combining investments in energy efficiency and renewable energy, the city could effectively become free from utility expenses with an 8 to 12-year payback. This would initially generate a guaranteed rate of return of 8 to 12% annually that would increase as utility costs rise. This is indeed significantly better than the 15-year payback the council has stated is a target return on investments for energy projects. The state of the art for efficiency and renewable energy technologies have improved, and the economics of such efforts in the 5 years since the ordinance have passed have greatly improved themselves. It is not expected that the city needs to spend $70 million to take city buildings and operations to net zero CO2 production. The same bonds could be used to help citizens and businesses in the U-City achieve the same net zero production for their homes and businesses. Besides funding the city's path forward, the bonds could create a revolving loan pool that is repaid solely by energy savings. Setting up the bonds to fund such efforts would accelerate U-City becoming energy independent. Additional benefits are: it would stimulate local economic development, generating skilled jobs for residents of U-City and beyond. It would sustain local economic development with an estimated burn rate of 10-plus years to bring the entire U-City community into the net zero fold. It would challenge the city to rethink how it provides services. Indeed, garbage and leaf collection could become positive cash flow opportunities from the energy that can be generated from these renewable resources. U-City could work with U-City school districts, for instance, to convert all of the school buses to electricity propulsion, which improves local health while reducing annual operating costs significantly. It would be a marketing coup for U-City to be able to claim that it is a net zero CO2 community. There are multiple win-win scenarios available here. I'd be happy to assist the city in reaching these goals. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is David Harris.
Good evening, David Harris, 8039 Gannon. I'm responding as best I can to what the briefing and the information that we've heard tonight. I'm pleased that the $27 million tax revenue error in Table 8 that Greg Pace discovered and that I presented on January 28th has been corrected. But I'm disappointed that there was no mention that the remaining amount of the sales tax may be insufficient to fund the promises made and the additional costs of the project, and therefore there may be a net loss to us from this project. Lest there be any misunderstanding, I agree with the Council's focus on the Third Ward and the Olive Business Corridor. With the financial issues and other issues of this project, the question is whether this project is the best way to achieve anything in those areas. And I appreciate the fact that I'm hearing that Mr. Rose is asking the Council to confirm their commitment to the project and to discuss it, and I hope to hear those discussions. I'm also pleased that there's an acknowledgement that the base sales in the area are now being considered $10 million rather than $6 million. That was another error of PJV or city administration. PJV and city administration have been saying the businesses in RPA 1 produce $6 million in sales tax revenue. A revised Table 8 now uses $10 million. That was something that was not disclosed when revised Table 8 was issued, but had to be discovered by Greg Pace and me. The increase and the base revenue reduces the incremental revenue and therefore reduces the funds available for the TIF. But there's no mention of the fact that this is a new loss of $2.8 million for the TIF because of this error. It's been dismissed as just 2%. The amount is $139,680 per year, or $2.8 million over 20 years of the TIF. Where is that money coming from now? That is a question, and I hope there is an answer to it. And that's just one of the many, many questions that have been raised. There have only been about six or seven questions answered. On January 30th, I sent about 40 specific questions and comments to Mr. Rose, Mr. Mulligan, and two council members in anticipation of a meeting on February 1st, a meeting that did not occur. On February 5th, I added to those questions and comments and sent them again, including the entire council. Of the questions I asked, few were answered tonight. There is not time in 5 minutes to ask the questions and share comments. Therefore, I request that they be included in the minutes of the meeting. I also request that the analysis about the $2.8 million shortfall be included with the minutes of this meeting. Additionally, on February 5th, I emailed Councilwoman Carr my questions and comments to the many misstatements and misstatements she made in her February 4th newsletter about the project. My email consisted of about 50 comments, most with specific questions. None have been addressed or answered. Again, there's not time in 5 minutes to ask the questions and share the comments. Therefore, I request they be included in the minutes of this meeting. I recognize it is the administration's and council's prerogative to answer or to not answer questions or to reply or not reply to comments. Please understand I do not raise these concerns lightly. I care deeply about University City. I'm a real estate attorney, so I have an understanding of a project like this. It still appears to me that you will be approving this project. If so, I sincerely hope you will address the financial concerns and the other concerns that I and other citizens are raising so we can have a good deal, not a bad deal. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Peter Burgess. And I apologize. I should be saying to everyone, please give your name and address as you introduce yourself.
My name is Peter Burgess. I live at 755 Radcliffe. Recently a major revision was made to the projected sales tax revenue, which we discussed, which the project would generate for the city's use. This revision overstated the projected revenue by an average of nearly $1.2 million annually from 2020 through 2040, total of between $24 and $25 million total. This mistake was discovered not in the course of the development of the plan, but at the very end of the process, after the development contract, in fact, had even been put on the agenda for approval by the City Council. By all accounts, up until a sharp-eyed citizen notified the city of the error, the city had counted on receiving that revenue when it came up with its plans of the public benefits that could be funded through this project, including $10 million for improvements in the Third Ward and $5 million in improvements along Olive Boulevard. The city had indicated throughout this process that the $15 million in improvements would be included as part of the deal, and it's used the promise of these benefits as a major selling point to attract support for the heavily subsidized development project. Yet the total revenue reduction of over $24 million is much greater than that $15 million for the improvements. This reduction in revenue, which is spread out over 2 decades, would be sufficient to pay back bonds issued right away to fund that $15 million in improvements. But now the money which the city had included in its original funding plan, that money's gone. And yet, despite that fact, it is giving assurances about this $15 million. If the hit isn't going to be taken there, by my understanding, it has to be taken somewhere. So I'm looking forward to understanding how that happens and what will what will the benefit, where will the benefits change, because this is all on the public side, and there's that much less revenue available. Now that this revenue correction is made, it makes the deal a lot more modest for the public, assuming that that hit indeed is taken somewhere by somebody, if not out of the $15 million in improvements that are projected. And it makes it a lot closer to the point where the development project funds itself and not much more. I think it would be wise to reexamine, now that that's the case, some of the long-term growth assumptions that are built into the development model. The model assumes straight-line growth of 1% for sales revenue and 1.5% average growth in property values per year throughout the end of the project life, which is 20-plus years down the line. At a time when we see climate change-induced disruptions of our lives become more frequent, reminder, New Orleans gets a 100-year flood every year these days, relying on business as usual to do projections for the next 20-plus years seems very unwise. Many climate change effects are accelerating, including ones that affect us here in St. Louis. The big freeze from a few weeks ago that brought the region to a standstill, that was caused by a weak polar vortex condition in the Arctic. Loss of sea ice in the Arctic in the winter directly contributes to these debilitating weather conditions seen here and elsewhere in the states. And as a result of climate change, we can expect that to occur more frequently. Because of these kinds of storms and other disruptions that we're likely to experience because of climate change, there's a risk of project revenues not being realized as projected. I think there's a risk there that should be considered. And to be honest, I think we should reserve giving significant massive subsidies to projects that will help us combat climate change, which this project doesn't do. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next request to speak is Ms. Sonia Pointer.
Sonia Pointer, 8039 Canton Avenue. One, I oppose this project. Two, I don't trust the process. Three, I don't believe your revenue projections, and it's a shame that private citizens are the ones who are coming up with the actual numbers. And 100 people on city staff, city manager, community development director, city attorney, and then consultants are collectively being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this right. And you all still didn't present the full details to us. Number four, I don't trust the council. Five, I don't believe the Third Ward residents will benefit from this project and will actually be adversely impacted, as I've been saying all along. Six, if you are really sincere about an update and sharing information with residents, then write it down, submit it to us. We can't gather all of this information as you speak it. Write it down. If you really want us to know what it is that you're saying, let us process it, have some time to process it, and come up and say what we have to say. This just isn't fair how you all try to keep us from actively engaging in this process. Stop with the tricks. Number seven, the real cost of this project will be passed off to all residents of this community, with Third Ward residents being hurt the most, though this project is supposed to help us. The most vulnerable people in this community live in the Third Ward. Eight, the only person who will benefit from this project is the developer. He's happy. He doesn't care. He's getting his money. We've been telling you this all along. People from the community, again, are the ones who've been doing the research, looking at this developer's history, trying to tell all of you, and you did nothing, and you're still trying to push this project through. I want this project to go to a vote if you all decide to go forward, and I think you will, because ego is involved now. It's not about what's best for the city. It's about ego. 10, if you all are going to have public meetings, send out certified letters to all of the residents of the community. We don't want signs on the side of the road like what has happened at the last Third Ward meetings. We don't want you to try to sit us at tables to try to minimize our voices so we can't hear what other residents have to say. We want a serious engagement, something like the format of what happened at the TIF Commission meetings, except make sure that there's enough space to fit all the people who actually want to participate and comment, address our concerns as we speak to you. Don't just selectively pick and choose what things you want to answer, what things you want to address. If you are serious about this community, do what's best. Listen to people. Respond to our concerns. You're not doing that. What else? That's all for now.
Our next request to speak is Ms. Carolyn Fan. Please put the microphone at the bottom.
Carolyn Fan, 2725 Clifton. I would like to ask, when is the last time the city council or the city manager has spoken to the businesses that would be impacted by this development? When I first found out about this development in April, I came and I testified at the very first hearing, and I said I thought it would be important for those businesses to be engaged and for translation to occur. That translation has never happened, and consequently, the businesses have very little information about the progress of this. I also testified, as did those businesses, that they actually generated more tax revenue than University City gave them credit for. That has since been shown to be true. So the other question is, why does U City not have records of how much tax revenue its own businesses generate? Why would you not look into this? These are businesses that put their heart and soul into being in U City, that want to be in U City. But now some of them are looking at closing. They don't know what to do. They have no, they don't have any plans because they don't ever hear from y'all. Because clearly, I actually talked to the businesses, and I really would like to know, and the businesses would like to know what the plan is and what the timeline is. Additionally, it seems that there has been discussions of a second development, even though the math on this first development is not correct. That second development, you know, I don't know how folks are going and talking to landowners about a second development and putting property and businesses on their land when they haven't even spoken to the actual owners of half of that land. I think that that is very poor communication, and it's very poor transparency. When I first found out about this, I had no opinion. I had no opinion, and then I took it upon myself to go and talk to people and see what they thought about it. That was the day of the very first TIF hearing, because if we all recall, there was only supposed to be one and done TIF hearing, and then I turned in 42 signatures from residents and businesses asking for more information, for more transparency. So we've had more hearings, because all of us have been delighted to be at all of these hearings, sometimes until 11 p.m. at night. But there hasn't actually been more information transmitted to the folks who are directly impacted. And so, you know, that's been a huge disappointment. It's been a huge disappointment that I am the one who has to translate for these businesses. I am not paid by U City. I wouldn't want to be paid by U City. And why do you not give your own taxpayers and residents the due respect of providing them this information in the languages that they seek? At the last TIF hearing, the one where the vote was taken, I submitted testimony from one of the businesses. It wasn't allowed to be read into the record because that night, rules were changed. Rules were changed to not allow people to be proxies on behalf of folks who run businesses during these hours, which, again, I'll remind you that 6:30 at night, really not a great time for restaurants and immigrant-owned shops, for any owned shops to come and testify and be here. So that testimony is from an acupuncturist in Jeffrey Plaza who had a lot to say, who opposes this, who had very little information. And by the way, speaking of certified mail, a number of those businesses never received the state-required certified mailer. The only information that they ever received was from the University City Chamber of Commerce, an institution which I understand has now been disbanded. I think that when one makes a mistake like this, whether one directly makes the mistake or one oversees it, you know, it's incumbent upon everyone to do their due diligence. And I really don't understand why UCity would send the police to the home of a resident who's concerned, who also didn't really have an opinion for or against. That seems like pure intimidation. That's just how it looks from my perspective. Thank you.
That concludes the request to speak on item K2. Are there any other requests to speak by members of council before we move on to other agenda items? Mr. Clay.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Crow. Understanding all the dynamics involved in the error, City Manager Rose, what are we doing to ensure that kind of thing does not happen again?
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clay, I think the best thing that happens is certainly it's known at this point. The TIF that is being proposed is unique in as much that it is not only focused on one particular area, it's focused on three areas. I think that we'll continue to try and drill down on the numbers. We'll continue to have oversight. Part of the process, though, is simply that it's provided and it's put into the public domain. And so that's part of the reason, is so that we have multiple eyes. One of the things that I admire about University City is that it has per capita some of the smartest people I think I've ever seen. And that's a good thing. I think it lends itself to a robust discussion on issues, and it also provides great oversight on projects. If you simply say an average citizen caught this, remember, Frank Ohlendorf is an average citizen here in University City now. And so I think it's that type of intelligence that simply exists in the city. And so we're very happy to put information out and to have our citizens be very critical of that, scrutinize it. It makes us better. So we'll try to make sure that we do a good job internally with our staff. But I think that that's a very important part of the process as well.
And have we engaged a different entity? And I think we may have engaged Stiefel in also supporting us in our due diligence.
Honorable Mayor, Councilmember Clay, there are two issues. One is the actual financial analysis, and then is the other is the distribution that. And that's where the mistake was. The mistake was not on the calculations per se. It was on who would actually receive the funding. And so certainly we have Stiefel that is on board that we'll continue to use to support us in this project. So we're trying to take a very much belt and suspenders approach. That we're checking and rechecking. And even through that rigorous process, sometimes something slips.
Thank you very much. That concludes item number K2. We will now move to the regular portion of citizen participation. We have two requests to speak. Please give your name and address, and please realize that you are limited to 5 minutes. The first request to speak is Sonia Pointer.
A few things. First,
please
on the last agenda,
name and address,
8039 Canton Avenue, Sonia Pointer. On the last agenda item, I wanted to say that I don't think that it's right that the city is trying to pass this off on someone else. You all represent us, not PGAV. You hired them as a consultant. But you were supposed to do your due diligence. You would have given us the information beforehand. Maybe we could have established it beforehand. Just stop trying to pass this off. This comes from the top down, not the down, not the people at the bottom. Stop it. This comes from the top down. I want to address someone who was at this council meeting at the last meeting. She got up here and said, I forgot her name, Katie, I think. She said that Sonia Poynter does not speak on her behalf. And I just want to let the council know. She felt the need to tell you all that for some reason. I don't know why. But I don't speak on whoever that person's person was behalf. Because I can never speak on behalf of someone who goes around bullying, harassing, and intimidating community members because they disagree with them about development projects. I can never speak on behalf of such a nasty person. I wouldn't speak on behalf of someone who does not believe in equitable development like I do. So I just wanted to reiterate to the council, yes, she was correct. I do not speak on her behalf. I'm a Third Ward resident who opposes the Olive 170 project. Moving along to something that's actually important. Steve McMahon, I did see your comments. Thank you for addressing them. But honestly, it doesn't really matter how you smack it, flip it, rub it down. You're purchasing property in the Third Ward. You have the ability as a city council member to bring development into the Third Ward, and you would be voting on the project. That, to me, is a conflict of interest. Now, you may disagree, but that is a conflict of interest. It's one of many conflicts of interest that I've seen throughout this whole process. Let's get this together. You should probably recuse yourself from voting on this project. There are all sorts of red flags with this project, and as I stated before, it's a shame that private citizens are doing the work of the city. I went around and talked to residents, trying to engage them, digging through videos about this project. You all did not do that. You just tried to pass our voices off as not being voices as not being important. You didn't engage us. Thank you.
Next request to speak is Mr. Leif Johnson.
Like that? Okay, good. I want to thank Councilman Paulette Carr.
Would you please give your name and address?
I'm sorry. Leif Johnson, 836 Barclay Square, University City. I want to thank Councilman Paulette Carr for her meticulous summaries of the Sinkfield plans and the Freeholder Board plans. Sinkfield's plans incorporated two major objectives. One, to eliminate the citizens' right to vote for municipal elections by abandoning or destroying all municipalities. And two, allow the greatest money grab that anyone in this room has ever been the victim of. Why? To float new indebtedness, bonds, on this amplified citywide tax base. New stadiums, hockey rinks, entertainment districts, downtown revitalizations, sports complexes. For us, that means more taxes and less services. Also, they may wish to shore up the bond rating of St. Louis City, whose present bonds are a hair breadths away from junk bond status. To head off Sinkfield's proposals, which have massive corporate and university lawyer immediate support. There is another proposal being circulated to create a board of freeholders appointed by the mayor of St. Louis, and this is the board of freeholders will be appointed by the mayor of St. Louis, the city council executive, and the governor. This is an appointed board, not an elected one. Would you prefer a non-elected board appointed by Cruson, Stenger, and the governor eliminate your right to vote for local office, as opposed to Singfield's proposal to do so? Would you rather have a freeholders plan to achieve the very same goals of regionalism as Singfield's? The only option you have is to defeat Singfield. There's no compromise. There's no way around this plan. There is no alternative plan. There's no choice but to stand up and fight. 95% of this country has city and municipality government. They function just fine as separate entities. We already have a region, therefore we have already a regional set of government. Singfield's regionalism means nothing more than a massive money grab. On the possibility of losing our right to vote, may we recall the words of Abraham Lincoln. If ever I feel the soul within me elevate and expand to those dimensions not wholly unworthy of its almighty architect, it is when I contemplate the cause of my country, deserted by all the world beside, and I standing up boldly and alone, and hurling defiance at her victorious oppressors. Here, without contemplating consequences, before high heaven, and in the face of the world, I swear eternal fidelity to the just cause, as I deem it, of the land of my life, my liberty, and my love. If we shall be defeated, we still have the proud consolation of saying to our consciences and to the departed shade of our country's freedom that the cause approved of our judgment and adored in our hearts, we never faltered in defending. We're talking here about losing our right to vote. Everyone here should realize that. Thank you.
Our final request to speak is Ms. Patricia Washington.
Good evening. I apologize for my voice. Patricia Washington. I'm at 7040 Plymouth in the Third Ward. I promised myself that I would not come before this council again to talk about the Olive 170 matter. It has been very clear to me for months that this council is hell-bent and determined to do what it wants to do regarding this project. That would be okay if what it wanted to do would not have such a negative impact on so many people. So tonight I came to say thank you to Councilman Smotherson. And I hope, Councilman Clay, and I would urge you to have not just one meeting in the Third Ward about this project, but several meetings in the Third Ward about this project. It is not too late to consider a community benefits agreement. It is not too late to continue the conversation about real benefits to residents of the Third Ward, specific benefits, not just hiring for first hiring practices for people to get a head start on interviews, but to hire people who really are at and below the poverty line and chronically unemployed and make them a first priority in terms of hiring for this project. I'm just really disappointed that a mistake as huge as not catching the pool city issue, that's not a minor thing. That's not minor at all. That is a major misstep, especially for someone like Councilwoman Carr, who always tells us how thorough she is. So I think that there is so much opportunity for us to go back, to again slow down, to look at the entire redevelopment agreement and bring that redevelopment agreement before the public and allow additional input and consideration. Who knows? Maybe some other residents, eagle-eyed residents, might find some other issues and may actually have some better suggestions. So I thank you, and I urge you, my elected representatives, to do right by those of us in the Third Ward, just like the rest of the people who are in the council are going to make sure that the people in their wards benefit. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes citizen participation. We'll now move forward to the public hearing. You have before you a public hearing. I will open it. The public hearing on the liquor license for 7930 Olive Boulevard at 7:41. Ms. Reese, are there any requests to speak?
No, none at this time.
There are no requests to speak. Therefore, I will close the hearing at 7:41. We'll now move forward with the consent agenda. You have before you the consent agenda presented by the city manager. A motion that the consent agenda be approved. Is there a motion? Motion by Mr. Hales. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Carr. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We'll now move back to the city manager's report. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and council members, before going on to K1, I would like to introduce two new employees. I would like to first introduce our new economic development director, Libby Tucker. We stole her out of the Chesterfield area and very pleased for her to be here with us. Thank you, Libby.
Welcome, Libby. Welcome.
Next, I would like to introduce the new planning and development director, Clifford Cross. Clifford comes to us out of South Padre, Texas, but his hometown is in Illinois, so he's very close to home now. There you go. Finally, I'd like to express my sincere gratitude to Rosalind Williams. I think I initially called Rosalind in a panic, and she was very gracious in agreeing to come out of retirement for a while to help us, and she did a wonderful job. As you know, she restructured our code enforcement. She hired Mr. Free, who is our zoning administrator. So I want to certainly extend an opportunity just to thank her and to express my appreciation. Thank you. K1 is an item where the National League of Cities partners with a for-profit organization to create a service line warranty program. And I would have our Public Works Director, Mr. Sinan Appleslein, introduce this item. And I'm told it's a five-minute presentation.
Yes. Hello, good evening. Before you, there is a proposal in the as part of the City Manager's report to provide an endorsement to sign into by signing into an into the attached marketing agreement, allow the National League of Cities to start advertising in University City to the residents of University City for a service line warranty program that can supplement the city's sanitary sewer lateral repair program by our council's action of last September, per staff recommendation, there was a change. The change was a $2,500 cap that applied to our program city matches into repair projects. So this limits the program participation by the city dollars, tax funds. The repairs, as we have discussed at length, can cost up to about $4,000 average. So the program that the National League of Cities sponsors is a program that is available to our property owners and residents. That is by their monetary payment of premiums of about $87 a year. Then it covers up to $8,500 per repair. And these are qualified repairs. They have to be first qualified, of course, as our program does. And it can be used as supplemental to our sanitary sewer lateral repair program. Here with me, I have Lee Zell from the National League of Cities to give you a brief description of the program and answer any questions you may have, and I can answer the questions as well, and the recommendation of our city manager, Mr. Rose, is to allow that the city allow the National League of Cities to start advertising to the residents of University City of this program, and this is done by signing into and marketing agreement with this entity. I'll turn it over to Mr. Zell for his brief presentation.
Good evening. I'm Lee Zell. I am your representative for the National League of Cities Service Line Program. I'm here to basically answer your questions, walk you through this program, and explain how the program works. So first of all, the National League of Cities created this program 15 years ago because cities across the nation realized aging infrastructure was a serious concern, and it kept coming up on their list from cities all across the nation as the topic that would not go away. As the years passed, where it was on your important list kept rising higher and higher to the top. So what this program does is, first of all, it's voluntary. Cities review the program. They determine that they would like to make the program available to your residents as a voluntary program. It is not mandatory. The city, there is no cost to the city. We use no city tax dollars. The communication of the program is what we actually come to you for. We do everything. So we communicate the program via a letter only. So we do not communicate with your residents by telephone or any other source. It is a partnership with your city. We want the residents to understand the current public policy of the city so that they understand where the issue becomes their responsibility, typically within their front yard, but in terms they want to hear is at the curb, at the right of way, at the where the meter stops for a water issue, that kind of thing, where the sewer tap is. So what we're doing in this program is starting to explain to residents before they have these issues what part of this system is their responsibility, what part is the county or a municipal authority's, And when this occurs, when they happen to make a contact to a city or a municipal authority, no matter who it is, when are they going to, what's the conversation going to be like so that they understand, I'm going to make that call, and I thought it was going to be they're going to take care of everything. What are they going to tell me? So we talk about this before these issues. In the end, what we are able to do is for lower income, for middle income, for fixed income residents, we explain to them, just as Sinan had mentioned, the cost of these can vary, and they can be many thousands of dollars. So this program fixes that. The cost of the program is $7.75 for each 1 month that a resident chooses to voluntarily use the program. They can use it a 1 month at a time. They can use it 7 months, 30 years, whichever. It's all up to them. So when they need help, they're going to get the help. When they need an answer that's not, it's thousands, instead they say, no, I have that program. I've already paid. There are no deductibles. There are no one-time fees. This is a national program from the National League of Cities, so we don't make exclusions based on what materials we find underground. If we dig down and find a lead line, well, we don't repair those. We cut those out and start over. So we're eliminating aging infrastructure issues by eliminating those issues. So in your city, the key was the cost of the program that was in place was quickly going to exceed the number of claims. So it was sort of we're getting to that point of negative. And so what we're asking from the city is your permission to communicate this program via letter to your residents. And what we specifically ask is if you might make a motion to authorize your manager, Mr. Rose, to enter into an agreement to communicate with us, to communicate the National League of Cities to all of your residents with no requirement for any resident to participate, but it's a voluntary program. And this is a partnership, so part of our communication is we do want residents to understand we are working with the city. So this is something that we are responsible to you. If you have ever a need for us, we come before you and we are accountable to you. So any questions?
Any questions from Mr. Clay?
Thank you for your presentation. I do appreciate the city bringing this back because this was brought up, I believe, when we talked about the budget and the challenges concerning the sewer lateral program. So this was brought out by Mr. Alfasan, and now it's brought back, so I appreciate that. Only contact residents by letter.
Correct.
I did see that. And this is, I guess, the city manager, Rose. Will the city also be involved in making residents aware of this program? Will there be media over and above the letter? Because I think this is something that could be of some value for at least folks to be aware, because it's $100 a year, correct? And that yields the potential of $8,500 in coverage, correct?
Can I help you with that?
Please.
Okay, let me help with that. So the program is well laid out, and we offer anything, and specifically, we work with cities. We offer what we call press release that most cities say, we would like to use this on our infrastructure public works type page to communicate to the residents before the program even arrives to allow them to understand that this is what the program is about. This is how it works. It is voluntary. We're not using anyone's tax dollars. So if you choose to participate, great. But if you're not, you're not subsidizing someone else. Those kind of questions. We also very much right at the time when we are going to communicate via a letter, which we do three times a year, spring, fall, and winter. And when we communicate, we offer to cities what we call a banner, banner note, and it would be at the top of your web page just for like a week to say, be alert, this letter is coming, mentioning the new water lateral program, which is voluntary. And the key there is the number one question, far above all others, that residents ask is they just want to know, is this real? So when they get that letter and they happen to look at the city website to ask, all of a sudden they see it and they go, oh, okay, never mind. They put the one and one together and they go, this is what I thought it was. So it is actually a program that the city is aware of. All over the program, we help the residents understand. We handle all the calls, questions, claims, but we also let the residents ask the city, are we participating? Is this something you're aware of? And that's our key, as being a partnership, because we want to be responsible to the city, and this is how we commit ourselves to you. There is no other type of thing like this, and any other thing, program like this, would not have any commitment to the city, but we do. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. I do think, and I can certainly follow up with the city manager, but I think given the challenges with the sewer lateral program, I think this could potentially be a good option. We know that the repairs for this this kind of issue, I mean, it starts in the thousands. And, you know, so we've got citizens all over the community, but in particular in the third ward, this could be beneficial. So I do want to have some more conversations about it, but from what I've read, this sounds like something that could be helpful.
Okay. Any other questions? Mr. Hales?
The only question I have is probably more to the city manager as far as what the – would you be reviewing whatever piece would be going out that would have the city's name on it and content?
Honorable Mayor, Council Member, yes. That information is provided to the city first. And, in fact, I think in some instances they provide you with the option of it being my signature that goes out. So we'll work through, coordinate through that.
Yep.
But, yes, we do review the information.
And to follow up on even that, to go further, every single time, not just at this one moment, but every time we communicate, we put that communication in the hands of the manager for him to look at and say, yes, this is acceptable. I would like you to communicate it.
Mr. Kusick.
Thank you, Mayor. The question I have is that your background review states that the cost per resident household would be approximately $100 per year. What is that based on? What is that fee based on?
Okay. I'm going to break that down a little better than the $100 idea. So the concept is we don't want to choose for a resident what they might need. So the program is divided between in-home plumbing, which is water and sewer, but inside their structure, and then exterior, which is the sewer from the tap on the main to the house. These are separate. They might choose one program or the other, whichever, or none. There is no commitment required. So the amount they spend is up to them. And as I mentioned previously, they can choose to use it as long or as short as they wish. Frankly, most people use the program until they get what they sort of wanted, which is something to get paid for. And so once a sewer line fails, the program comes out, replaces the line. A couple weeks later, we get calls that are like, well, it's all brand new. I sort of thought I would cancel. Now, you can do that. That's exactly how we designed the program. So many people continue, but just that's how the program is set up.
Mr. McMahon.
Just a quick question. Maybe I missed it, but when the program's used in, as a supplement to our program, is it our money going out first and then you guys kick in, or are you paying first dollar and then we come in at the end?
Thank you. Actually, to clarify how this is going to how this would be available is your program is there. It's already there. The limit is lower, $2,500. This is $8,500 per incident. So I bring that up so if a reason occurred where it was a problem that caused a line, tree roots or whatever, where it was cleared, that's an incident, but that's That's the end of that. Tomorrow, the 5 minutes later, you can have another issue. So there's no limit on the number of incidents each year that you can have. So this program is not limited in any way, and that allows residents with common areas that are very aged, that are going to have a problem, and most likely if we fix it, we're fixing it and we're coming back within months because the line is too old and brittle, so it's really falling in on itself. This program is set up so that we can come out and say, okay, this line needs to be cut out and replaced in its entirety. So does that help?
Your microphone, please.
Oh, yes. Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Yes. If the resident chooses our program, we pay from $0.
Okay.
So your city would not spend any money. If the president chose nothing, they would have to rely on the city program, but that is a very small limit. So this program goes ahead. It jumps ahead of the whole program, therefore saving the city any cost.
Thank you. Before we move forward, we need to have a motion to approve. Is there a motion? Motion by Ms. Carr. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Cusick. Is there additional questions, discussions to be made on the motion on the city manager's report? Hearing none, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. We'll now move. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now move forward to the unfinished business section of the agenda. Can we please have the second reading of Bill number 9380?
An ordinance amending Schedule 3 of the Traffic Code to revise traffic regulation as provided herein.
Thank you very much. May we have the third reading?
An ordinance amending Schedule 3 of the Traffic Code to revise traffic regulation as provided herein.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to approve? Motion by Mr. McMahon, seconded by Ms. Carr. Is there a discussion? Hearing none, would you please call the roll?
Councilmember Carr?
Aye.
Councilmember McMahon?
Aye.
Councilmember Hales?
Aye.
Councilmember Cusick?
Aye.
Councilmember Smotherson? Aye. Councilmember Clay?
Aye.
Mayor Crow?
Aye. Thank you very much. We'll now move to the new business portion. There are no resolutions. We do have a new bill to introduce. Who would like to introduce Bill number 9381? Mr. McMahon, may we have the first reading?
An ordinance fixing the compensation to be paid to city officials and employees as enumerated herein from and after its passage and repealing ordinance number 7086.
Thank you very much. We'll now move forward to council reports and businesses. Does any member of council have any items to discuss under this portion of the agenda? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I would like to just mention that yesterday the library and the library board and staff hosted the first annual patrons event, thanking all of the library patrons and friends of the library. It was well attended for all of those residents that came out and braved the February weather here in University City. And I would like to also remind residents that the library board recently passed an agreement that there would be a Prop L on the ballot on April 2nd to increase the tax levy for the infrastructure changes for the library of 12 cents over the current levy. And I would encourage everyone to become aware of that and support it if they can. Thank you.
Mr. Hales.
Just a couple of things. The Traffic Commission meeting this month is canceled, so I guess I'll take this opportunity now to welcome Mr. Tears to the Traffic Commission. And also, it's worth noting, we actually have four members of the Traffic Commission here tonight, so I don't think that's ever happened. That's all for the Traffic Commission.
Thank you very much. We have no more requests to speak. Council comments. Any comments this evening from my colleagues? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. The resident, Mr. Johnson, spoke earlier about the Better Together process that was taking place. It's going to be a statewide initiative to change the Missouri Constitution, Article 6 of the Constitution, to revise it, to repeal it and replace it with a new one. I would encourage people to become aware of what that is. And I would like to read one of the definitions from that. It's essentially the changing the Constitution by which the St. Louis City and St. Louis County would be merged as one municipality. And from the petition that is available on the Secretary of State's website, I would like to read Section 2, which says that upon the effective date of this section, the territory of the County of St. Louis is extended to embrace the territory heretofore in the City of St. Louis and the County of St. Louis, and the County of St. Louis, so expanded, shall continue its corporate existence as a new political subdivision, body corporate, public, and municipal corporation, which is hereby created with its name, the Metropolitan City of St. Louis, and its seat of government within the territory heretofore in the City of St. Louis. What that means is that the people in outstate Missouri will be deciding what will happen with those of us that live in the city and the county. And it has been said before that we need to have representative government, and we won't have that. It'll be the people in outstate Missouri that will be deciding the fate and the future of those of us that live in the city and the county. Now, there has been a petition process started to asked the city and the county, the mayor of the city of St. Louis and the St. Louis County executive director to bring together a freeholders meeting so that those of us in the city and the county can come together and can present our voices and say what we have to say about this whole issue. Now, it certainly won't trump this petition if it's effective and if it passes statewide, but it'll give us a voice and it'll give the people in outstate Missouri a chance to hear what those of us in the city and the county of St. Louis feel about a possible merger. And I would encourage people to be aware of what this merger would and would not do, because quite frankly, when you read the process, they're pretty vague on a lot of issues as to how this new government would look that would be one incorporated area of the city and the county of St. Louis. And to that end, there are those of us that are passing petitions around. We need 15,000 signatures in St. Louis County and 5,000 signatures in the city of St. Louis to be able to create this board of freeholders so that the is that correct, the board of freeholders? Yes, the Board of Freeholders, so that we have a way of being able to petition the city and the county to make our desires known. So having said that, I would encourage everyone to learn a lot about it, because we may not be seeing the University City and our municipal government the same way in the next couple of years if this goes through. Thank you.
Any other requests to speak from council? Hearing none, I'd like to first off thank all the citizens who came out tonight to speak on all the issues, including those that were on the city manager's report. I think it's one of the things that the council members, I think we have said all along, is that to the best of my knowledge, I think the council continues to support the development, and we continue to support the need to have funds go forward into the Third Ward and along the Olive Corridor. And we have always said, and we continue to say, we will always maintain that we will not vote for something if we do not think it is in the best interest of the residents that we represent. Just very briefly on Better Together, I will tell you that as we go forward in this discussion on Better Together, it is incumbent upon all of us to read the entire report. It is clear that they don't really anticipate folks will take the time to do this. I think it is important for you to do that, and particularly in University City, where we are the third largest municipality in the county. We've also been, I think, many times in the history of our community, a leader in regionalism, and I think many of us believe in it. I think this is clearly not the best pathway forward for us, but I think we would all probably, different folks here said there are some good ideas in this that we probably can embrace, but this is not the pathway, at least for me, that I would choose going forward. I think there are serious flaws in this plan, and I would agree with my colleague, Mr. Cusick, as a young man who grew up in Farber, Missouri, I do not believe that my 375 neighbors in Farber should be voting on whether or not St. Louis City and St. Louis County should come together, let alone the details. I also think it's important for us to remind the people in outstate Missouri that if we're talking about merging the city and the county, where does this line stop? Where does it stop? as far as smaller communities, smaller counties, because we really, if we're talking about efficiency in that way, that becomes a very dangerous double-edged sword. But I do ask that before any of us go off too far, that you do take the time to read the report, because I think that it's important for us to know that there are some things in there that probably we would agree with, but that at the end, this is not the way for us to go forward. With that, I would request a motion to adjourn. Motion by Mr. Cusick, a second by Mr. Hales. Those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Our meeting is adjourned.